the number one hit music station. More music, more variety. Welcome to The Alternative. Playing today's new country. Oh, sorry, I was just practicing. I'm Matt from Matt Fogarty Voiceovers. I know you want to listen to your podcast, so I'm going to keep this super brief. If you're a program director and you're looking for a fresh sound on your station, hit me up. I'll do a free, no-obligation sample for you, and you can get a really good sense for how I'll sound on your station. Get in touch at mattfogartyvo.com. I'm seriously sitting by my computer hitting refresh right now. Email me. Do it.
The Sound Off Podcast. The podcast about broadcast with Matt Kundle. Starts now.
Sam East is the afternoon host at Virgin Radio in Toronto. She's a content creator, on-air personality, and as you'll hear, very self-aware. I was listening to her shows back when she was working in Kitchener, and that's about the time TikTok arrived. So I followed her. Now, I still have no TikTok account, but I am taking notes, and maybe one day I'll jump into it. She started a podcast last year and is studying up on meditation. Sam East joins me from Toronto.
Been watching your career now for a number of years, and when people ascend up the ladder and get to a nice pinnacle spot like you were, I think you were going at the time from Kitchener to Toronto, there's always much more of a backstory that we don't know. So what led you to radio?
Well, there's even more backstory beyond Kitchener as well. And I have to give a big shout out to Chatham, Kent, Ontario. And I know that you just spoke to Marianne not too long ago. She's from that area. And that's really where it all began. And I listened to a lot of the episodes, and you spoke to Shannon from Virgin Montreal not too long ago as well. And I smiled listening to her story of how she came into it, because much like her, I didn't have the typical, you know, sitting by my radio, hoping and wishing that I would be the next big thing in radio. It sort of unfolded in a kind of unconventional way. But I did start my career in Chatham. And that was after I had gotten fired from a job in TV news. So I guess even going further back from that, I thought that one day maybe I'd be the next Peter Mansbridge, foolishly. I really thought that was the career path that I was destined for. And I started working at CBC News right out of university. I went to Ryerson for radio and television and marveled at the intellect and just the brilliant minds that were around me in that newsroom. But I had a really hard time admitting that I was not a part of that world, because for my entire life leading up to that point, I wanted to be. So it was hard to come to terms with the fact that that was not for me.
Why did you get fired?
Well, this is what brought me into radio. So one day they pulled me aside and they were just like, we have no more shifts for you. You know, from this point forward, you're basically not going to have any more shifts. And I was working behind the scenes. I wasn't on camera or on air in any capacity as a chase producer, as an editorial assistant. So I was running teleprompter and doing a good job of messing that up. But I was pulled aside one day and told that I wasn't going to be getting any more shifts. And I just did not take that news well, because it did kind of blindside me. But I was determined after that point to figure out, well, why? Where did it go wrong? And I had the good fortune of talking to some different managers of mine that I had worked with in that space. And one in particular that I got a shout out, her name's Mandy Look, and she was the assignment producer at the CBC News Chase Desk. And she just looked me dead in my eyes and said, you were mediocre at your job. You were mediocre.
So that's a very honest response. It's also someone's opinion at the same time. A lot of people would not take that well. How did you take it?
I did not take it well, but it was the swift kick in the pants that I needed, that I really needed to reevaluate. Well, what am I doing? If I'm being perceived as someone who's performing in a mediocre way, that's probably a reflection of something that's going on within myself. And, you know, the underlying thing there was, I wasn't really passionate about what I was doing. Lots of respect for people who work in news, but it certainly wasn't for me. And from that point on, I kind of made it my mantra, if you will, to attempt to at least never be mediocre in whatever I was pursuing. And that, you know, that was 2013, and that stuck with me until now. So I thank her for giving me that brutal truth, because it is something that motivates me regularly. So I find myself jobless and living on EI. Luckily, I was living with my mom, so it wasn't too bad. But I really wanted to pursue on air. That's what I wanted that entire time. I wasn't sure in what capacity. And I was getting no leads on the on-camera front. I was getting turned down left, right, and center. And a friend suggested to me, have you ever considered radio? And I know this is going to sound offensive to the radio diehards who are maybe listening to this, but my auto response, which is so foolish in retrospect, was, oh, radio's dying. It's obsolete. I don't want to go down that path. But then I gave it some more serious thought and I made the world's worst demo, truly, burned it. I hope it never sees the light of day again because it was horrifically bad. And I started reconsidering this. I mean, again, at that point, I was unemployed and I knew that I wanted to entertain in some capacity, but I was still finding my way. And I was applying to all sorts of cities and towns, everyone that you could imagine. And I'm so lucky that Chatham, Ontario called me back and gave me a chance on a morning show there in 2014.
Just thinking about my podcast stats in the future, we're going to be like number one in Chatham and Tilbury. I'm really looking forward to that.
Southwestern Ontario's got you.
Do you think that broadcasting doesn't have enough Mandy looks, telling the truth, being honest?
That's such a good question. I do think we need to sprinkle in some more Mandys. I think if everyone was a Mandy, that would really harden us. But we do need a little bit of Mandy. I think she saw that there wasn't, you know, a real drive to work in the space that I was in. And to be honest, I didn't feel like it was a put down. I didn't feel insulted. She was calling it like it was. And yeah, everybody needs a figure like that in their lives.
So you know a lot of people because you run into them, you hear it. They'll say they don't want to go into radio because radio is dying. What do they need to know that you know?
It's alive and well. And, you know, I was proven wrong instantaneously because I was fortunate enough, like I had said, to get this job working in Chatham, Ontario on a morning show. And also, I got to give a shout out to the program director, who's still the program director there, Jay Poole. He said, we listened to your demo. It's not the best. It needs work. However, we hear some potential in what you're putting out. And that was a totally fair assessment. It was. I knew what it was. It wasn't a great demo, but the fact that he could kind of sift through that and see maybe there's something more there, I give him total gratitude for seeing that. But, you know, working in a small town like Chatham, and it's funny because before I accepted, they sort of cautioned me and said, well, you're from Toronto. It's nothing like Toronto. The sidewalks roll up here at 8 p.m. and the nightlife's nothing like you're used to, et cetera, et cetera. But I wasn't going there to have a flourishing nightlife by any means. I wanted to build my career. And I feel so lucky looking back on the experience. I was there for 3.5 years. I was immediately welcomed by the community. And I really think, you know, it's cool if you get your start in radio in a big city. That's amazing. But it's such an amazing foundation to have to work in these smaller communities because you feel the impact immediately. And this is not even, you know, wanting to be recognized or anything like that. But it's hard when you're in a studio and of course you don't have an audience or anything and you have no idea what the impact of what you're saying is. Is it funny? Is it impactful? Is it meaningful? Is it useful to whoever's listening in whatever capacity? So to be able to go to the grocery store and immediately get that feedback for better or for worse, you see, you know, the power of radio, I guess, for lack of better phrasing there. And it immediately proved my initial thoughts on it completely wrong. Oh my God, I made a fool of myself by saying that.
So did you go from Chatham to Kitchener after that?
Yes, that was an interesting move to make because I definitely made a home for myself in Chatham. And then I was on a morning show doing well there and took a leap of faith and did Weekend Swing in Kitchener for Virgin and K-Fun as well, which was quite the challenge.
So the Kingston-Waterloo market, I think if you add up all the numbers in the listing area, that's the top 10 market in Canada.
Yes. Yeah. So that was part of the decision. And a lot of people were questioning me like, well, why would you go from a morning show to Weekend Swing? And I had to take the leap of faith because I knew that I wanted to grow and it paid off for me, I think. I think it paid off in ways. But yes, there was an immediate change of pace.
And it doesn't hurt being within earshot in Toronto. Tell me, who did you work with inside that building? Who are your PDs?
Karen Steele, who's still my PD today. She was the one who brought me on there, which is fantastic. And yeah, she's been, I mean, I've had a couple, I've had different PDs in between the time from Kitchener to Toronto, but she was my PD in KW and she's my PD now currently in Toronto.
That was sort of my way of poorly phrasing a question to say, how great is Karen Steele?
She's been wonderful and has taught me so much about how to really prep a show for the listener. She's really taught me a lot about having that listener in mind and picturing that in your brain with every word that's coming out of your head while maintaining your authentic personality.
Which actually sort of dovetails into the next question I had, which is what goes into each show you do every day? And I don't mean, you know, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to write this out. What do you do from the time you get up? How are you living life just before the show starts every day?
Oh, it's probably unhealthy based off all the studies that come out, but I'm unfortunately rolling out of bed and looking at my phone immediately and seeing, well, what people are talking about. I mean, of course, that's what everybody, what every radio host is doing, but I'm scouring. I'm looking at every social media. And now it's TikTok, which is a whole other beast of its own, so much so that it's kind of wild to think about, you know, if for those who use the prep service sites, TikTok has infiltrated the prep service sites. So not only are you looking for things that are happening in the world, which, I mean, that's almost a no-brainer at this point, but you're looking about who's creating content that everybody's talking about. That's honestly a huge part of what we do now.
When you said, I'm checking my phone, the thing I'm thinking about, oh, she's going on Twitter or maybe Instagram to see what's out there. Because I think of news, I think of Twitter.
Yeah, so I'll do this. My kind of train of thought with that is I want to see what's going on in the world. I want to see what's going on Twitter, on Instagram, what people are talking about. But then I'll move over to TikTok and see what content people are interested in looking at and creating right now. Because I think that's a real kind of temperature check on what's going on in the world, especially over the pandemic. It's become a beast of its own and it informs a lot. Not everything. I got to stress that. But it informs a lot of what I put out, both through the speakers and online as well.
Yeah. So I'm a passive consumer of TikToks. I don't even have a TikTok account, but of course that doesn't prevent anybody from going into TikTok and just consuming content. But I'll see songs get matched up with certain ways people will present something that they have to say in a matter of 15 seconds, whether they're head bobbing, whether they're tapping their hands, you know, at a particular song. I don't know the name of the songs, but you know the ones we're talking about. But there's definitely a lot of people drawing inspiration from one another on TikTok to create their own content. And then, of course, it sort of spins out of control and everyone's doing it.
It's interesting, too, though, the relationship that not only radio has with TikTok, but TikTok has with radio. This is something that, again, reaffirmed that this industry is alive and well. And I had my doubts because a lot of course, the demographics on TikTok are really young. But when I started posting content about working in the radio industry, I was admittedly shocked at how much people gravitated towards it. And again, it just reaffirmed that it's not going anywhere, not yet.
So I've got two Gen Zs in the house, and I told them they would have to shovel the walk or shovel outside or get out of the house while you and I were going to have this conversation. I'm going to be speaking to Sam East. And they said, why are you talking to a TikToker? Both of them know you from TikTok. And I said, well, do you know Sam? You know, she's on the radio. I said, that's her side hustle.
No. Side hustle?
Yeah. And the same thing happened with Shannon Burns. You know, I mentioned that I'd spoken to Shannon Burns and said, oh, yes, social media influencer, Instagrammer, TikToker. I said, well, you know, she's on the radio, right? Yeah, I guess.
This is the hilarious thing because that's their first point of reference with us. But with that, I'm finding that some are also migrating to actually listening to us on terrestrial radio, which is cool.
Yeah, well, they get to hear you live and in person, which is really what radio does best, is deliver the live and in person.
Yes, for sure. It's the intimacy that the other mediums don't necessarily have.
So a question that I know a lot of people would walk up to you and say, how do I get to 35,000 followers on TikTok?
A fluke? It's a very odd thing. And I was just having this conversation today with our digital content producer at Virgin. She does Virgin and Chum, Stephanie. I'm not going to pretend that I have all the answers. I don't. Because some days I'll roll up and think I have, oh man, this is going to be good. And it gets 10 likes. And it's a very humbling process. It's good. It keeps you on your toes. I think number one, though, and you'll hear this with a lot of TikTok creators, is authenticity. It's so obvious when you're not being you. Again, there is sort of a parallel between TikTok and radio in that it is intimate. You know, you're holding up the camera and you're speaking one-to-one to that person on the other end. But you got to be authentic. And another thing that people often talk about a lot, but I really struggle with, is finding your niche and sticking to it. I know that's important because in the TikTok world, it's very different, I find, from Instagram and Twitter and all the other social media, because on Instagram, someone's following you because they're generally interested in Matt. They're generally interested in you as a person and not necessarily your niche. On TikTok, the content that gets filtered through, it works in a totally different dynamic. People will follow you because they expect to see certain content from you. So for me, I like to consider myself a bit of a multi-hyphenate. It's really hard for me to stick to one. I like to kind of dabble in a few different things, radio certainly being one of them, but I like to do different things on the app. So it's hard to gauge where to even go with it. I don't like to speak about it like I'm an expert or anything, but I think having that baseline of authenticity is why I'm doing all right on the app.
So a number of the things you were talking about are all the things that are really needed for radio. It's really the same tool set, which is, you know, stay inside your brand box or your niche, or, you know, inside what people will know you for. Again, we don't really know what's going to hit. I mean, whenever you do a bit on the radio, we don't know what resonates and is going to have the best reaction every time, which is how, you know, radio has come up with some of the more creative contests and promotions over the years, is that, oh, wow, did you hear that thing actually works and people reacted to it? So it's really the same tool set.
It is. You truly have no idea. I mean, I guess the difference maker on TikTok is you see the numbers instantaneously, whereas in radio, well, it depends on what metric you want to go by, but let's say it's ratings. You might have to wait weeks and months to see if that bit that you're talking about went over well or was a total flop.
Yeah, it's true. It's instantaneous stuff that you get to see. I mean, it's the same in podcasting. We get downloads now, and it's, again, it's a little more definitive as to, you know, what's working versus what isn't. I mean, in radio, you got to remember to write it down if it's a diary or PPM that you were exposed to it because you took a trip to the dentist and anyway, all that other stuff. It's a different conversation. I've been told that I don't get a lot of downloads when we talk about, you know, radio metrics too often, but Instagram comes out with Reels. Is that more work for you now? Or how did you approach that when they came out with Reels? Did you think I got to do twice as much work?
There's a lot of repurposing, which is kind of great. But I also, you know, like we just talked about, it's a different investment from the audience on Instagram. They're invested in you as the person and not as much the type of content you're putting out. It's an odd thing because TikTok, even though it's hugely popular and there's a bazillion people on it, I almost treat it as if it's like my secret platform that nobody can find me on. And it's opened up this new sort of confidence, I guess, for me to post things that I actually would never post on Instagram. It's a very odd thing. So yes, I will repurpose a lot of the things that I put on, but there is strategy to it. I almost hate to admit that, but there is strategy to it because I just know certain things won't fly on both apps.
In just a second, more with Sam as we talk about the Filipino-Canadian experience, being mindful. And no, we're not done talking about social media. I think I might have got a little sidetracked, so I'm going to bring the conversation around subtly and try to keep this podcast on the rails. And I put a whole lot of goodness up on the webpage at soundoffpodcast.com, including some of the best from Sam's social media.
25 catalogs, over 2,000 albums, 61,000 songs, 197,000 tracks. Megatracks has everything you need to create the perfect sounds for your station, podcast, or digital program. Our flagship catalog, Megatracks, has hundreds of albums covering a huge array of genres and styles. Deep East Music and No Sheet Music deliver international sounds straight out of London. Sensacion brings an authentic Latin flair to every album and is recorded live by local musicians. Megatracks also has a huge collection of FFX, sound design, and narration mixes to give you full creative freedom to make any type of production imaginable. Head on over to megatracks.com or call us at 818-255-7100 for your music licensing requests. That's megatracks.com.
My thanks to Nlogic for their continuing support of the show. They have a very useful webinar coming up that reveals more about how Canadians have adapted to the new normal brought on by the pandemic. It's largely going to deal with purchase behavior. Yes, we've all gotten strange with our money. And Logic is going to be using the data they have collected with the help from Sales Pro and the Numeris RTS survey. They're going to do a deep dive into consumer behavior in Canada since COVID-19. Webinar takes place on March 6th. Sign up now at nlogic.ca.
The Sound Off Podcast with Matt Kundle.
So originally I asked you, what are you doing between, when you get up in the morning to prep for a show every day? And then, of course, we got into the social media talk, but what are some of the things you do after you find out what has gone on in the world?
That's like the hardest question. That to me, what are your hobbies? How do you fill your time is the hardest question to answer. These days, a lot of it is mindfulness. When the program directors and the bosses say, what is your thing? Inadvertently, this has become my thing. It started as something that I used in my personal life to help ground me and bring me some peace to my day. And it's become something that I'm truly passionate about. And I think that mindfulness should be essential learning for everyone. It helps you understand yourself and other people. And for those of us who work in a performance space, it's a great tool to ground you in the kind of chaos that we exist in, that we work in. So currently right now, I'm taking courses to become a mindfulness meditation teacher. And I'm hoping that I can integrate that into what I already do. And yeah, spread some peace and positivity. I think there's a bit of an appetite for it, especially right now with where we're at. And I'm hoping to put more of that into the world.
What does meditation offer you?
Space. For a lot of us, there's a million tabs open in our brains at any given time. For a lot of us, you walk into a room and don't remember why you were in that room in the first place. It's really easy with the constant barrage of information that's coming at us every single second to not have that moment. Mindfulness and meditation is about not controlling what happens in your life, but how you relate to it. So this has been something that I've been working on, and I'm not a master at it by any means, but it's played a key role in my everyday life. And I think anyone can benefit from it. Even the people who are like, oh, there's no way I couldn't ever quiet my mind. I got too much on the go. Everybody can find a moment for themselves for some mental clarity.
I find mine in a yoga class because there's no phone, can't do anything. All you got to do is the next pose and just breathe. It's so wonderful to not be anywhere near a phone. And like you said, open tabs in the brain.
Yeah. How long have you been doing that for?
11 years.
Wow. Okay. Well, I mean, there's a meditation and yoga really go hand in hand. You don't have to sit there, cross-legged and if that's not your thing. Meditation looks and mindfulness looks different for everyone. I mean, as long as you're taking time for yourself to cultivate that, that's beautiful.
What is the best way for you to keep your mind from wandering in meditation? What tactics do you use?
Oh, that's a good question. And I used to fixate on that. If I walked away from a meditation session and found that I wasn't really paying attention to anything happening in that session, but everything else swirling around in my brain. But in the courses that I've been taking, they tell you to change your approach to that entirely and just accept the fact that human beings are wired to have all these thoughts. And they're often the exact same thoughts that you had the day before and the day before that. So it's really the self-compassion that it's okay if your mind wanders. It doesn't make the practice any worse. The fact that you took the time to sit and be with yourself, whether that be for 2 minutes or 35 minutes, it doesn't matter. So it's really changing the relationship with that need to make it something productive. We don't have to look at everything like it's check off the to-do list.
Should I put 1 minute of meditation into this podcast?
God, yes. We could all benefit from that.
Thank you.
okay, no judgment. But if you fast forwarded through the meditation, you likely need meditation in your life. Again, no judgment.
I think in your social media bios, you mentioned that one of the things you were documenting was like Filipino life.
Yes.
What was it like growing up Filipino in Canada?
This is a big part of who I am. And I think, you know, in sharing these stories of your upbringing, whether you're Filipino or any other, whatever your upbringing may be, it's important to put these stories out there, especially when you do have a little bit of a platform, because people want to see themselves represented. And I think that's more important now than ever. To answer your question about growing up Filipino in Toronto, the Filipino community in Toronto is massive. It's huge. And I'm very fortunate to have grown up in a place where people who look and sound like the people I grew up with were all around me. Restaurants with the food, Filipino food, are readily available all throughout the city. And now on, you know, Uber Eats and can be delivered straight to your doorstep, which is incredible. But certainly there's some discrimination that comes with that as well. I mean, you can't see us in the podcast right now, but one might not guess that I'm Filipino because I'm half Filipino. So for me, I didn't necessarily feel discrimination personally, but I saw members of my family, like my mother and my aunts, going through that in really kind of insidious ways or microaggressions that, you know, that term that has become familiarized now in recent years. Because I don't outwardly present as Filipino, I would not have experienced that firsthand, but I've seen it secondhand with members of my family. So in seeing that, I have sort of made it a part of what I put out into the world, that I'm proud of who I am, who my family is, my upbringing, and I want people to feel well represented.
So, fun question. We're going to give you a trivia question right now. Toronto and Vancouver are 1 and 2 in Canada for Filipino population size. What Canadian city is third?
Oh my gosh. Montreal?
It is Winnipeg.
Okay. Oh my gosh. Can I take that back? My mom moved to Winnipeg from the Philippines. I should have said that. Why? Why did I say that? Oh my gosh. She talks about her time in Winnipeg all the time.
According to the latest census, 77,000 live here in Winnipeg. We even have a radio station that is Filipino for most of the day.
Oh, that's amazing. You know what's hilarious about that? They picked the coldest place. They really did. You know, my mom always talks about how she immigrated from the Philippines and she got here and was so uncomfortably cold and they had to plug in their cars to warm them up in the wintertime. But it's a very common place for people from the Philippines to immigrate to.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know like the roots of it or why that happened per se, but I think it just happened to work out that way. And a very notable population up in the north end of Winnipeg. It's largely a Filipino population up there.
Have you had some Filipino food?
Pancit.
Yes, for long life. On New Year's, you always have to have some kind of noodle dish. And pancit is the most common one, and you eat that for long life.
And the other one, and now I'm just getting into stereotypical graphical trouble here, is Jollibee.
Okay, yeah, well, you got to. It's okay. It's a first point of reference for a lot of people who are being introduced to Filipino cuisine. No harm, no foul.
I would have not known about Jollibee if it weren't for it opening up in Winnipeg, and I read up on it. And, oh, the chicken and the spaghetti, and it's a whole thing.
Oh, it's a whole thing. It really, really is. Have you had the sweet spaghetti?
Yep.
That's a Filipino thing. I'm not going to lie. Probably going to get some hate for this. That is not my favorite. I don't love the sweet spaghetti, but I know so many people do. And it's, I wouldn't say it's Filipino cuisine. It's just the adopted menu items at Filipino fast food restaurants. I'm not sure why.
It's Filipino fast food. I think somebody once said, I think this tastes like ketchup. I said, no, ketchup's got more vinegar in it. This is a nice, sweet, sugary, kind of wonderful way to eat spaghetti. And for breakfast, I might point out.
Yes. Oh, gosh. We always do dinner for breakfast. Dinner for breakfast all the way.
Tell me about your podcast, Lessons to My Younger Self. You've got a bunch of episodes that you put up there. And look at this superstar lineup. You've got Dr. Jess O'Reilly, because sex with Dr. Jess. That's a regular listen with me. You got Jess Allen from The Social. Why did you want to get involved with podcasts and how has the experience gone so far?
I better answer this question correctly because you are like the goat of podcasts here. So you're the knower of all things in this realm.
Well, I didn't say you were doing it right or wrong. I just wanted to know what you've learned so far.
Okay. Touche. All right. Podcasting is something that I've always been interested in pursuing in some capacity. And I toyed with ideas for years, but they never felt genuine. They never did. I didn't know what direction I was going with. And then in the pandemic, I sort of had my little breakthrough because I just found myself, like so many other people, in this deep introspection. When you got nothing else to do, and when you're done watching Tiger King, all the episodes, you're left with yourself on the couch in this pandemic. And that's what birthed the idea for it. I wanted to have conversations with people that were not surface level. Because even though small talk is a very big part of life, and especially in our industry when, you know, social events get back up and running, as someone who is actually becoming more and more introverted, actually, I'm an ambivert, a little bit of extrovert and a little bit of introvert, small talk pains me. So I wanted to create a space where I could avoid small talk at all costs and really get into some meaningful reflections with people that I think are awesome storytellers, with people that are experts in their fields, people who have really meaningful things to say. And the overarching theme was something, yeah, that was thought up in the pandemic when I was doing a lot of thinking.
When did you know you were an ambivert?
When I started working in Toronto, because my whole life I thought I was an extrovert. I'm an only child, and I always needed to be interacting with people, performing on some level, making people watch me sing and dance. That was always a part of it, putting on a skit or something. And that's an element of being an extrovert, yes, but introverts can have that too. But it wasn't until I got to Toronto, and social events really ramped up when you're in Toronto. Before the pandemic, it's like any given day of the week, you could be going to a social event and schmoozing and networking. And I realized the importance of that in this industry 100% and lots of different industries as well. But I found, you know, true extroverts get into those situations and they feel exhilarated by having these quick moving conversations. But I quickly found myself realizing, oh, I think my energy is being sucked a little bit. And there's some shame with that too, because you go into entertainment and it's like, you got to be a firecracker. You got to be on all the time. And that I'm realizing through mindfulness is something that I'm not. I can certainly turn it on. I certainly can, and I will when I need to, but I really get energized by conversations that are meaningful and not surface level.
Well, it's exhausting being an extrovert.
Are you an extrovert?
I have the same answer you did. I was, you know, for years going out and being everywhere and doing everything, and then it became exhausting. And I think it was because as you progress through, more and more creative energy is being asked of you. If you're going to do a performance or you need to host somewhere and you have to be on, that gets to be a little bit exhausting. You know, there really is no off, because then you've got your phone and then you've got to do a TikTok, and you know, it's harder than ever to find that downtime. And I think you're right. I think the real value is going to be found in meditation. For me, I found it maybe at a yoga studio, and still find it today on a soccer field if I, you know, get to go play. That's going to be 120 minutes that is really going to be just engaged with chasing a ball around a field, which is really what, you know, the healthiest of dogs do.
Yeah.
You know, that isn't that most fun? But it's exhausting being on all the time. So as you do progress through this, yeah, you're probably going to want more and more inside introverted time.
Yeah. And, you know, it makes sense to me now looking back, and, you know, you hear about really big celebrities, not comparing me to any big celebrities whatsoever, but you hear about them and how they want to retreat and they might be rude to people at parties or whatever. And now I see it's because their energy is completely tapped. They can't keep rolling through these motions of small talk and kind of vapid, meaningless conversation. So when a lot is being asked of you in those situations, and hey, some people thrive, some people love it. And I know that the true extroverts really struggled through this pandemic because they need that interaction. But certainly as an ambivert, I'm actually leaning more to introversion now. So, you know, going back to the podcast question, on a personal level, I wanted to feed that. I wanted to feed that meaningful connection that I really hope to get out of conversations that I have all the time.
Speaking of those big celebrities, you've met one of the biggest. Tell me about your Oprah moment.
Oh, Matt, I peaked with that one. I really did. That was for sure the biggest moment of my life thus far. And not just because it was Oprah, but because of what it meant to me overall. I mean, the story for that, for those who don't know, is there was an Oprah show coming up in Toronto. I had tickets to it. It canceled because of the Raptors NBA Finals schedule, which was a really big deal, not just in Toronto, but all throughout Canada. I was pretty bummed that Oprah's show was canceled. So I made a very silly video, and I can't stress enough how silly and ridiculous this video was. I made it on my iPhone, edited on my iPhone, was embarrassed almost to post it because it was so silly. And the day after posting it, Oprah was alerted to it and responded to me on Twitter. So you can imagine the shock that came over me as I was doing some voice tracks and I see a drop down notification on my phone that said Oprah Winfrey replied to you.
Yeah, you're in trouble now.
I'm like, well, to be honest, because I always, not always, but I often downplay things. I thought, oh, that's probably an Oprah fan account. Oprah's not going to respond to me. No, but it was her. Verified, real Oprah responding and saying that she would save me a seat at her Montreal show. So I still, like, this happened a couple of years ago. I still get emotional when I talk about this because the words coming out of my mouth sound fake.
We just started 2022. What are your goals for the year?
Oh, to not play small. And this is where the mindfulness comes into, to operate out of a space of contentment and gratitude, but really to not play small. I think self-doubt creeps in for a lot of people. Comparison. Oh man, that's the thing with social media. That's the other side of it. The comparison really creeps in hard. But I don't want to play small. I don't. And when I even look back on that Oprah moment, it's a reminder that the things that you dream up, even though they might initially feel ridiculous, if you work hard, if you got good intentions, if you're committed to not playing small, sometimes they actually happen.
Sam, thanks so much for doing this podcast.
Matt, thank you so much for having me. This is some good, meaningful conversation, and I appreciate that.
No, I just love having you on. I just see you on TikTok all the time doing stuff, and I'm like, I got to get her on. And so this is the time. Like I always say, I've got to get her on. And then I do other things and I come back. I got to get that person on. I got to come back and do other things. So I probably, you know, it takes about a year sometimes to really sort of get these things happening. But here you are and here you were. And thanks so much for doing it. And I know what, you have 6 minutes to your next call and just enough time for a cup of tea and a bathroom break.
Thank you so much, Matt. This was a lot of fun.
The Sound Off Podcast is written and hosted by Matt Kundle. Produced by Evan Serminski. Social media by Courtney Krebsbach. Another great creation from the Sound Off Media Company. Imaging courtesy Core Image Studios. There's always more at soundoffpodcast.com.
Hi, I'm Logan Anderson, host of the Say the Damn Score podcast. On my show, I deep dive into the sports broadcasting business by, you guessed it, talking to sportscasters. The show has featured big names like Bob Costas, Kenny Albert, and Vern Lundquist, as well as many up-and-coming broadcasters who you may not know yet, but you will know soon. Whether you're looking for professional development as a sportscaster, different career paths, or if you just want to be entertained by hearing some of the best storytellers in the world tell their own stories, this podcast is for you. You can subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can visit our website, saythedamnscore.com.
Come on a journey like no other, where you will discover many roads that will lead you to a happier, healthier, and more stress-free life. And the beauty is, you don't need any vacation time for this adventure. The journey will come to you. Join Avery Rich on your very own journey into yoga. Along the way, she will demystify yoga poses and guide you into a yoga posture or short sequence, all in less than 15 minutes. You have nothing to lose but stress. The Journey into Yoga podcast. It's not for people who like yoga. It's for people who don't like yoga. Follow or subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or at averyrich.com.